chicken and egg proposition here.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to open the January 22nd, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development. Good morning, everyone. The first thing that we're going to do is have our organizational meeting, and we're going to have a brief introduction of the members of the subcommittee. And I would like to start to the right and have self-introductions. Chairman Schaffler for the House Committee on Business and Labor.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative. I'm Mike Schaffler, House District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland. And as the good chair said, I'm chair of the House Business and Labor Committee. This is the first time I've been a chair of a committee with a subcommittee. This committee is in excellent hands when it comes to workforce development and labor and family wage jobs in this state, not just with the chair, but the gentleman that served with him. And they are going to be handed a lot of work, and I'm confident they will wade through it in a timely fashion, and I look forward to watching it happen. I will not be attending these meetings unless I'm absolutely requested and drug in here, because I know they're going to do a great job. So with that, I'll pass it along.
Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, which is Medford.
Kevin Christensen, the Committee Administrator.
I'm Brad Wood. I'm Chairman of the Subcommittee. I represent House District 31, which is in the upper northwest corner of our state. It runs from north of Portland out to the mouth of the Columbia River. Vice Chairman Huffman.
John Huffman from the Dalles, representing District 59, which is a large chunk of eastern Oregon. And glad to be on this committee. I've served with Chair Witt the last almost year and a half on workforce and economic development. And I think we've heard a lot of good testimony, and I think we've made some good decisions out of that committee, so I'm glad to be here with you.
I'm Paul Holvey, representing District 8, Eugene and Central Lane County. And I'm kind of wondering how many of us members it's going to take to drag Representative Schaffler to this meeting when we need him.
I'm not far away, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Michael Dembrow, and I'm a newly elected member from Northeast Portland, Park Rose, Maywood Park. That's District 45. And I come to this committee with a great deal of eagerness. My background is I've taught in the community colleges for many years. We're in the area of developing people who have, in many cases, not seen a place for themselves in our broader society, and who have discovered that they have incredible talent. And I look forward to helping to develop that workforce and build family wage jobs. I'm also a longtime labor leader, I'm proud to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Keith, if you'd like to introduce yourself, please.
All right, I'm Keith Bassett, and I'm the assistant for this committee. So if there's anything I can help you out with, let me know.
Thank you very much. And with that, members, everyone has received a copy of the draft committee rules. Presumably had an opportunity to review those. Are there any questions about these rules? I'm not seeing any. Is there any discussion on the rules? I'm not seeing any either. I would entertain a motion to adopt the rules.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the proposed committee rules as presented to us.
Representative Holvey moves adoption of the committee rules as presented. Any discussion? Seeing none, hearing none, without objection, they stand adopted. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'd like to now move into the informational portion of this meeting. We have with us this morning a commissioner of Workforce and Community Colleges, Cam Price. The intent here was for Commissioner Price to come forward and review our committee's report from the last two legislative sessions. The her department was instrumental in assisting this committee in writing its report, and her review presumably will enable us to all be on at the same point as we begin our committee's work this session. So good morning and welcome. Thank you very much for coming, Commissioner.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Witt and members of the committee. For the record, I am Cam Preuss, Commissioner of Community Colleges and the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. It is my pleasure to be here this morning and review with you work that was done in the 07 session. For there are some hardy souls here who participated in that process, Chair and Representative Holby for, I think, the entirety of it. And as Representative Huffman said, he joined in the interim.
Commissioner, could you hold up for a moment, please? I'm getting signals from the back of the room that maybe our audio is not coming through. No one, I'm hearing no from everyone back there, or seeing no.
Maybe she needs to get the mic closer to her.
There we go.
You can yell at us. We're used to it.
Yeah.
No, save that for later.
Can you hear? Can everyone hear that now? Is it coming through?
Is it better?
Better? Yeah.
Okay.
Seeing affirmative. Thank you.
Should I don't think I need to start all
That's
over,
fine.
Do
You're
I?
Fine.
Okay. I understand from the committee administrator, Mr. Christensen, you do have in front of you a copy of the report. As Chair Witt said last session in 2007, you had probably a month and a half, if not 2 months, of public information hearings, and that generated a lot of information, volumes. And Chair Witt and I sat and talked about the magnitude of that information and how are we ever going to synthesize it into some relevant themes for the committee to consider. So my department offered to take the information and do just that, synthesize it to some key themes. And also, we chose some pithy quotes from committee members and from some presenters that seemed to really make the point about the interest that the committee had in workforce development and economic development. So the report, I think, it does a nice job of briefly exploring the issues. And if you look at the first page, at the bottom there are a series of bullets. Those bullets were the themes. Now, just for the record, we did hire a third party to do the report. The department didn't actually write it, and it was reviewed by then by Chair Witt and Co-Chair Riley and Lim. And so we like to think that there isn't a lot of department bias in this report, but rather it is truly reflective of the committee's work. So you can see at the bottom of page one a list of issues, whether it's the skill gap or critical shortages, on to keeping pace with innovation. There was also a lot of testimony before the committee on climate change and sustainable economic development. It continues on to page two to discuss shifting demographics, competitive global marketplace, and how can we best elevate current best practices and move them across the state. The report then takes each one of those themes and develops it a little more, trying to capture the information that was brought before the committee. From that, then, what the report was actually finalized without a lot of time for the committee to have in-depth dialogue about it. So we then, the committee had an interim meeting, and what I have presented or passed around this morning are notes from that work session. That was a work session that happened in October of 2007, which took those trends and tried to then talk about, I think what the committee, if I might, determined was that you are one partner and one participant in moving these key themes or issues forward. You couldn't really do it alone. And a lot of doing it, if you will read the very first and second bullets, are a lot about investment. And yet this committee doesn't have a solid role in investments and resources, that's ways and means, even though you can influence that, it's not necessarily under your purview, if you will. So how did you then take these pieces, these themes, and discuss among you, what you did was discuss among yourselves who else had ownership and partnership? So there is a matrix that is also attached, which took the key themes and the strategies in each of those themes, and then who you thought, at least at that point in time, was your partner in accomplishing them. So the skill gap included not just this committee and those strategies, not just this committee, but the Department of Education and the education committees, as well as Ways and Means. So that's the information that you have. That's how it's laid out. I think the steps that I, in reviewing the report again earlier this week, there were three major themes from the seven, and that was to increase investment to ensure quality education and training, competitive businesses and industry, and a strong infrastructure. The second one was that we needed high-performance workplaces and highly skilled workers. And third, we needed integrated planning, development, and delivery of workforce and economic development activities. So if you were going to try to really condense it, those were the three next steps. So I'd be happy to pause there and talk about the report itself. Take any questions you have, if you like more in-depth discussion, particularly the members who did not participate.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Commissioner Preuss?
I have, Mr. Chair. I did. Thank you. I didn't have the benefit to sit in on that. When I look at the January 17th piece here, back here it says that 43% of Oregon manufacturers report a shortage of skilled workers. I think that's still true in a certain case, but that certainly doesn't reflect our economic times, does it? Or how does that still mesh in with what we're
Chair Witt, Representative Schaffler, it does not, although I cannot say that it has diminished, the skill shortage for manufactured workers has diminished appreciably. Even with our current economic situation, we know that there are manufacturers who still can't find the skilled workers that they need. But I can update that percentage if that would be helpful.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I know a woman who's a foreman at a steel mill up in Portland, and she says they've had, for years, she's told me they've had openings, but they cannot find the workers to fill these technical jobs. So,
and Representative Schaffler, I think you've hit the crux of the problem that our committee discussed here over the last couple of sessions. And I think, I know Representative Huffman and I have had discussions about this. Several of the rest of us have as well. Representative Holvey, I know. And the information that our committee has received is that virtually every employer, every industry, every sector throughout our state, and we are not unique among the United States, is facing a critical labor shortage. And I think the information that we found was that it is first in terms of numbers, And that's not across all industries, but secondarily, adequately skilled workers. And that appears to be widespread and universally true. Yes, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I attended, had the opportunity to attend a workforce development meeting in Southern Oregon. And exactly what you're saying in these meetings that you've had is exactly what we face in Southern Oregon. I was astonished last year to find out we had 1,400 family wage jobs that were unfilled in the Southern Oregon area. And, of course, I had to ask the question, why? One is the students coming out of high school aren't adept enough to read and comprehend. Two, their math skills are atrocious. Three, they aren't responsible enough to come and take care of their job. And four, a lot of them can't pass a drug test. Facts of Southern Oregon. That's probably something that goes on not only in Southern Oregon, but the whole state in general. It's up to us to, and believe it or not, I was on the curriculum committee for RCC when it first came to Medford. And one of the things that came out of that committee was astonishing to me, and it was have a class that makes youngsters learn how to balance their checkbook, how to get up and go to work on time, to be responsible and not be late and take care of their job. That's astounding to me. That's stuff you should learn at home. But obviously we aren't learning that at home. So we have our work cut out, but I think that if you, you know, like you've gotten a great start here, but if you get our heads together, I think we can work in conjunction with K through 12, the community colleges, and have a transition right into the apprenticeship programs that we have around the state, and we could have quite a system. I know we could in Southern Oregon, but I don't know about the rest of the state.
Thank you very much. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I caught Representative Schaffler before he left, because he hit on a really important point that I think this committee examined, notwithstanding what Representative Esquivel just said. I mean, those are all true statements. Our workforce isn't, you know, we have numbers, we have people out there, but they're not adequately trained or educated to take the jobs that meet the requirements of the employers out there. But the fact that we're in this downturn in our economy is, you know, something that kind of confuses the underlying issue, I think, that certainly we have a lot of unemployment, and it's probably going to get worse right now. And so you think, why do we need to, you know, move forward with, you know, training and education and those sorts of things, because there's so many people unemployed? But the real fundamental is that if those workers, when our economy starts turning around and we're trying to get stimulus into the workplace, into the employers, to try to create jobs, if we can't, if we don't have a good skilled workforce at that point, it's going to slow our economic recovery down substantially. And I think now is the time that we need to be investing in that trained workforce and pushing it, even and doing our best to provide job opportunities for them long term. Because if we don't get out in front of this, when our economy does recover, we're really going to be slammed and really be scrambling for a skilled workforce. So I just wanted to, you know, let Representative Schaffler know that he really did hit a piece that we sort of juggled with as our economy's kind of going downhill and unemployment's going up.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I know you all have done a lot of work on this, and the bills that are relating to this specific area are coming right here. And I look forward to you working them and getting them to us, and we to help address these challenges. So I look forward to that. Believe
thank
me.
You very much, Mr.
I have
Chairman.
To go, forgive me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Demarest, please.
Thank you. You know, needless to say, I'm a real fan of the community colleges and addressing the kind of situation that Representative Esquivel is talking about. Because often, in my experience, students come to the community colleges with exactly those lacks that you're talking about. You know, in academic, just personal, lifestyle, etc. And when they emerge, by then often they've picked up families and, you know, whatever. They're ready to engage. And I think there really is a role for the community colleges to play. But I have a question for you, Cam. And, you know, if we were to look at the situation that Representative Schaffler referenced, and we don't know what kind of organization it was, but there's a steel mill that has technical jobs that are unfilled. Do we have some sort of kind of intervention system in place, you know, a caseworker kind of thing where, I mean, if we have a need over there and we know that we have people who want jobs over here, you know, which can, you know, get to work on that and sort of fill every void, as it were, you know, because I'm also a strong supporter of partnerships, you know, where you have industry partnering with colleges or with unions to actually develop that workforce. So can you say something about sort of the more targeted kinds of things we can do?
Chair Witt, Representative Dembro, I can begin the answer. I think you have continued to hit right on the nail on the head. To the example of Representative Schaffler, years go by when a critical position, a highly skilled critical position, remains unfilled, means that something isn't working. And whether it's the public system that does the connecting between the supply and the demand is certainly a part of that. The target and the partnership that exists, is, if I might, just organizationally, the Employment Department is tasked with the role of determining and producing or publicizing the unemployment rate, which unfortunately, is, as you say, is going up, but also where are the occupations dispersed around the state, where are there shortages, in which occupations, and now, and I think the committee yesterday heard from Graham Slater, who's the research director at Employment, about a new and improved priority list that he has developed, his staff have developed, that doesn't just do a rear-view mirror of what occupations exist and then projecting forward which ones will exist into the future. But he's, and I would commend him to this committee to have a full-blown presentation on, and maybe you're going to do that, but because I cannot do it justice. But suffice it to say, a part of that is to look at, he has completed a vacancy survey that looks at how many jobs have been vacant and for how long, and using that as one more additive to where are the high priority shortages in the state, looking at high skill and high demand occupations. He has now produced a top 20 list, both by workforce region, that what we term labor shed. So there are 15 labor sheds in the state. There is some melding of them, but right now the information is then delivered to the 15 workforce regions for them to have that information about where are the critical shortages in their area. We've also done it statewide, and we have done it particularly for healthcare, for manufacturing, and for our current definition of clean and green occupations. The reason for that foundation information about where are the shortages is so the supply side can get better at connecting to the demand side and knowing exactly. I mean, it wouldn't be no surprise to you that the leader of the pack in all 15 regions is nursing. Second in most regions is truck drivers. From there, it goes to other allied health occupations, manufacturing occupations, welders, other and some other construction trades. We remain committed to providing the information to local workforce boards, local community colleges, local high schools, so that they together can build the programs that meet that most critical shortage or those occupational demands. Having said that, they have the information. What they may lack is the resources, be they human resources or just dollars, to ensure that that connection is made. So it takes the apprentice community, it takes the community colleges, it takes the Workforce Oregon system all working together to meet this. And right now, as you probably can well imagine, the Workforce Oregon system is really swamped with individuals who are seeking to file or ensure that their unemployment insurance is coming to them. Even though our interest is in skill development and we're continuing on that track, right now there's an awful lot of people whose first and primary interest in coming to a WorkSource Oregon Center is to file their unemployment and make sure they're going to be receiving it. I strayed a bit from your question, hope it sets the context.
No, it does. If I could just follow up, I'm just wondering if there's any potential system in place to sort of case manage these gaps and sort of bring the parties together kind of proactively rather than just wait and put the information out there and hope that everyone takes the initiative.
Chair Witt, Representative Dembrough, yes. The information is just that. It's to act as a starting point for local workforce boards who are the policy leaders in these regions to determine where are they going to focus their effort, where are they going to spend their limited resources to meet these critical shortages. And they can partner with the community college, they can partner with other vendors in the community to make sure. And there are, clearly, there's a lot of detail that would be very helpful for you, and a presentation by the local workforce boards on how they operate, how they determine with that public-private board that advises them how to invest their resources would be, I think, helpful to you. But I know in the Portland area, they actually have what are called skill panels, where they take a particular cluster of businesses and do an in-depth analysis of in their labor shed what's needed with employers, and then communicate that to vendors who produce either short or longer term training to close that gap. So it is, as I described it, it is initially a passive system of information, but then it becomes a very active system at the local level. And we can talk about what the state does as well, but I'll wait for that.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I see a cooperation between the community colleges in our area and the employers. I see that they are communicating, that they are trying to line things up, especially since we acquired the Table Rock campus for Rogue Community College. But what the disconnect that I see is K-12 system and community colleges. K-12 system today is geared specifically, almost entirely, toward college education. But the fact of the matter is less than 18% of all students that enter high school graduate out of college. So that's about 82% of the population we're not doing a whole heck of a lot for. So what I've been trying to initiate in Southern Oregon is to have the K-12 system work in conjunction with the Rogue Community College on the Table Rock campus and allow these youngsters that have and know they will not go to college, that would like to become plumbers, would like to become electricians, would like to become framers, diesel mechanics, and what have you, to have an opportunity to attend a half a day out at Rogue Community College in the Table Rock campus and work right into the workforce eventually and tie into an employer once they attain and get past the community college level. That's been a challenge, but finally our school district is starting to talk with our community college down there, and they're entertaining that idea, and I'm very, very pleased to see that, because what are we doing for 82% of the kids that are coming out of school? That's the question.
Representative Esquivel, you're singing my tune. Thank you very much, sir.
To the choir.
Thank you very much. And we've had a number of presenters in the last couple of sessions who've come here and told us a great deal about jobs that are available to folks who don't attend college but are able to earn a living that in many, many, many instances exceed the earning power of your average college graduate. So thank you very much, and we're going to be taking that straight on. Thank you. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with the comments from Representative Esquivel. You know, it has been long an issue in this committee and an issue for the state of Oregon. The vocational education has, you know, as we went through years and years of cuts to our school districts, going back to Measure 5 and when, you know, property taxes were capped and our schools were, the burden was shifted to our state into the state income tax, yet our income tax didn't really go up to accommodate that increase cost. It, you know, has created a lack of vocational education in our K-12 system. And, you know, at some point, I think it does become, as Cam alluded to earlier, is a resource issue. And certainly our community colleges are well poised to help fill this gap. And if we could get vocational education back into the K-12 system, it would certainly be beneficial so that we could provide that base of skill levels that employers are going to need. But at some point, we have to have that partnership with the private sector to step up and help out with this training. As we get, you know, a base level of education or skills developed, you know, the ongoing training or the advanced training is going to have an investment. And the industries that benefit from that investment need to be there, you know, when it comes to the funding. We had many proposals last session that were all predicated on us getting raising some more revenue through a corporate tax, and so we have to have the resources to move that forward if we're expected from the state level to provide this training. We have to be able to pay for it, and I think that that partnership has to come closer to an agreement where the private side of this is going to help chip in to pay for it. And I guess I've been singing that, as Mr. Eider in the back knows. I'm right there with them, but, you know, we need the resources to get this training up, and I think the industry is prepared to step up and be a player in this, but it really is going to take an investment. And So I think that partnership with the private sector has to come to fruition sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Representative Holvey. And I know that Commissioner Price has long been an advocate for partnerships in workforce development. And a couple of things that that I would ask is maybe if you could briefly touch upon the importance of the partnerships that business and labor and government bring to the table, and how we benefit from those partnerships. And one other thing, earlier you had mentioned the concept of labor sheds, and for some of our viewers, if you could briefly describe what that is. We're not trying to get rid of workers. And why thinking and acting in terms of the interests of a labor shed is helpful for workforce development?
Why don't I, Chair Witt, why don't I start with that question first? I'm sorry if I'm a little loose with my jargon.
That's fine.
The the organization of federally funded workforce programs is the genesis of that is around a workforce area, and it's determined by it could be a commuting distance, but what do people generally in an area, how could you delineate an area as a workforce area or a labor shed? I would say 20 years ago, they were particularly in the Portland metro area, they were easier to define. But as the Portland metro area has grown, we would now say that that labor shed includes Yamhill County, Marion County, Clark County, so that instead of just Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, which is sort of has had been the workforce labor region, it's now grown because people will commute in that entire area, and employers will seek both employees and suppliers from not just from that area but primarily from that area. So a labor shed is just that concentration of where people will commute to in a general area. It is an important part of my speak because federally that is how the money is distributed in the state by those geographic labor work or workforce areas, which is something you don't need to care about. But when I go about and local workforce boards organize themselves, they organize themselves in those labor areas where labor is geographically dispersed.
And for some of us on this committee, I think three of us here anyways, that labor shed is bigger than the boundaries of our state. And I suspect that that's true for Representatives Esquivel, Huffman, and myself at least.
Yes.
And so as we consider efforts to entertain workforce development, our reach has to be broader sometimes than just our very localized consideration.
Absolutely correct, Chair Witt. Absolutely. Talk a little about business and labor partnerships to the other part of your question. And perhaps it's a well-worn example, but one of the best examples, and it hits on Representative Holvey's point about business or industry investment, is the work that has been done in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years around health care. When the Oregon's Workforce Investment Board commissioned a study, that study came back and said, we are woefully underutilized. We have a shortage. We have all these issues, and they actually broke it down into there are skill shortage, but there are also workplace issues. There are reasons beyond just entry into the job that is the reason for the shortage. So they then had working groups that worked on I believe there were 4 different issues. The ones that remain most in my mind are the workplace issues, not just compensation, but hours, contracts, those kinds of things, and then skill shortages. So on the skill shortage side, as you probably well know, there has been a great coming together of the university system and the community colleges to join in partnership around the preparation of nurses so that nurses that want to move from a registered nurse to a bachelor's degree nurse or even a master's degree nurse, there is now one curriculum. And the community colleges have, with exception of a few, have all signed up for to ensure that nurses don't ever lose any traction in their career path. And they can certainly stop as a registered nurse with an associate's, but if they want to continue on, that path is well paved for them. The ability to increase the number of nurses is really only possible because of that, but also because of the employer investment. I can't give you a dollar figure. I bet there are people who can. Probably the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute could document the actual dollars that have been resourced to either a community college or another area in the community to build a nursing program or other allied health programs, that without that assistance, without the investment of an additional instructor or more clinical sites, we would not be at the place where I think the increase has been in the last 5 years, a 70% increase in nurses in this state. And it's because of that increase of both making it a priority and having more colleges and universities invest in it and having the pathway clear for people, as well as the employer's investment. So Oregon, a sterling example of a business-labor partnership.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Talking about what Representative Holvey was on the public-private partnerships, and that's always been a theme near and dear to me in trying to work those out. And in my region, I think we've been extremely successful in working out a lot of those. And I promise I won't mention Dr. Toda and Columbia Gorge Community College. But one of the things entering into the session is exactly that, and some of the decisions we're going to be making over the next few months, I'm very concerned about funding being cut to community colleges, because it comes right back to the heart of that point. There are partnerships that have been in the works and successfully, and those are at risk. And when you know, when the state promises capital investment or general fund investment, whatever that is, you know, and our college presidents are going out and increasing this public-private partnership, whether it's with Google or Mid-Columbia Medical Center or Vestas and Iberdrola and in the renewable energy sector, and they go out and leverage those promised funds, and then we pull the rug out from under them and withdraw those funds, then the Dr. Totas of Oregon have to go back and, quite honestly, on a couple of those partnership agreements right now, I'm not sure where they stand, because the funding is so uncertain. That's a grave concern to me in that public-private partnership. We have excellent people out there trying to leverage that and do a good job, and they're just kind of lost right now.
Point on, Representative Huffman. If we're going to talk about workforce development, then education is, in essence, our seed corn, and it's been a long uphill struggle in this state to be able to find adequate funding. We've come light years of recent, but I share your concern, because I don't believe that we're there even now. And for us to, in these very hard economic times, to be considering cuts there is really unfathomable to me, because without the education and training basis, we can't move forward with workforce development. And without workforce development, we can't move forward with economic development. And that is the genesis for recovery in this state and across our nation. Point on. Further discussion? I'm not seeing any.
Commissioner?
Yes, Representative
Dumbrough. Actually, I have a question that's more immediate or short-term. Actually, I mean, we're talking about long-term, you know, really sort of investment in the workforce. But I'm just wondering, since you're here, Madam Commissioner, about the short-term. You know, we're looking at a lot of layoffs, obviously, and a lot of workers in need of immediate dislocated worker training. And I wonder if you could tell us how the prognosis is for that, because I know there have been big cuts in that area in terms of the people at the colleges and other training centers doing that work. Are you optimistic that money is going to flow from Washington now? And because, you know, I know my college has laid off many, many workers who are working with dislocated workers at exactly the wrong time.
Representative Dembro, it's a sad day when the dislocated worker support is the one that is now the dislocated worker. I am optimistic that the federal stimulus will have dollars for dislocated workers. Right now, in Congress, the House proposal does have $4 billion specifically for this program area that includes both adults, youth, and dislocated workers. That is approximately $30 million to the state of Oregon. Just a brief snapshot, in the last 2 years, our overall state investment has gone down more than 12%. So we have been over $50 million annually in that program, and it has fallen below $50 million. And part of that is really pressed by the fact that we had a very strong economy, stronger than other states. So the total resource, when it is divided, went to more needy states, particularly in the Midwest, who were feeling the layoffs before we were. But we are now right up there with the rest of them with our 9% unemployment. So my hesitation in telling you what the actual dollar amount is, we don't know exactly what unemployment figures they're going to use to run the formula, if you will. But our expectation and the expectation of Congress is that money will flow quickly to the states. It will flow through the existing administrative structure, so there is no need to build something new. So the 7 workforce areas in the state of Oregon that received the money in the past will have access to those resources. I would say that just late last week, we got notice from the Department of Labor that we received $1.8 million to serve the Hynex layoff. That actual grant request went in. It's called a national emergency grant to the Department of Labor last September. We have waited 4 months to get these resources. The state does have some temporary assistance resources that we moved to Lane County so that those workers would not go without resources if they needed them in there as they look to retrain or be reemployed. But this is great help, $1.8 million for 700 workers, so we're very pleased with that. We do think the Department of Labor, under the new administration, will move more aggressively, more efficiently, to fund these grant requests. And so all that to say, I am optimistic that resources will be here. We have heard as early as the middle of March to assist in the dislocations.
Commissioner, you mentioned that you've been waiting a long time for greatly needed resources, and I just want you to know that if you're of the opinion that any action by this subcommittee could be helpful, please come to Vice Chair Huffman and myself or any one of the other members. If it's a letter or whatever it would be, I want this subcommittee to entertain that. If it's needed, I want you to feel free to come forward and tell us how we might be able to be helpful to your efforts.
Thank you, Chair. I very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
Advocacy is always welcome.
Well, and your partnership and your department's partnership has been greatly valued here. I want you to know that. And members, I would ask that each of you take a moment, perhaps this weekend, and review the committee's report. This will help put us on the equal footing that I talked about earlier. And it is my intention to meet with our administrator and Vice Chair Huffman and myself
to plan our committee's work, first around a limited number of informational hearings, and then the bills that have been assigned to us. And this is our foundation. And again, Cam, thank you very, very much for your past efforts in providing this to our committee. Any further questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Just in the way of where we're going to proceed, I mentioned that we're going to be having some informational meetings. I haven't had an opportunity to go over the specifics with Vice Chair Huffman as yet, but it would be the intent to have a limited number of folks come in from business and from labor to give their perspective on the critical need for skills and skill upgrades that our group discussed today, as well as Representative Esquivel, your mention of a number of the barriers that our potential workers are facing. And we cannot afford to allow this considerably sized segment of our potential workforce to not gain entry. It is costing us vastly too much. And our workforce development depends on our ability to integrate everyone into our workforce, even those who have sidelined themselves through their own mismanagement of their skills. Further discussion? I'm not seeing any. Kevin, if you would just please give us a brief review of where we're headed.
Fair enough. Chairman Witt, members of the committee, we are, over the course of the next couple of meetings, setting up presenters who are going to come and speak on some different issues. I believe we have slated for next Tuesday the governor's office will be speaking, as well as a representative from the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. I'll be giving a presentation similar to the one we received today, except with respect to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. We're also going to see if we can cam back in with the community colleges and give a presentation. Following that, we're also trying to line up, and we're in the midst of doing so, different business representatives and also labor representatives to give a little bit more of a perspective as to what's going to be, what's kind of happening out there for the committee's benefit. And hopefully about that time, we will start getting bills in earnest coming from the business and labor, the main committee, down to ours. So that's kind of a preview of coming attractions.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions or comments? Last word? Seeing none, we stand adjourned until next Tuesday. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.